This is Ranger Kidball Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com and the executive director of the World Sweeping Association. I have on the phone with me today Andy Coolidge. He is the managing partner for the LLC Cam South. And Cam South is a full service provider of exterior services. Andy Coolidge is a guy that has 20 years of operations management that he brought with him. And the management was for properties, parking lots, and so forth. So this is a rare opportunity for our contractor listeners to hear about why Andy and Cam South have been so successful, because they know what the customer needs, they know how to expand their services, provide the quality that's needed, provide the professionalism that's needed, and as a result, they have expanded since the company was purchased in 2014 from 1.5 sweepers, and I'll let you, Andy, tell you how that half came in, to having 30 personnel working every day. So they're located in Birmingham, Alabama, with another office in the Auburn-Opelika area. And Andy, welcome to our interview, and I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me and putting this together.
Well, you and I have spoken off recording, and I know that Cam South was actually started 10 years ago by someone who kind of brought it up, dropped it out, brought it up, dropped it out. But really, the growth has occurred since you acquired the company in May of 2014. And I guess the way to start is, you know, a little bit about your background and then how on earth you could have bought 1.5 sweepers.
Well, let's go with the easy one, the 1.5 sweepers. What I acquired was 2 cab over. One was a Victory. One was a Schwartz. The half, it never ran when I bought it. I knew what I was buying. Well, I was told I was buying a sweeper truck that could work, but the chassis engine didn't run, so I had to swap out a chassis engine in that sweeper. Didn't scare me too bad because, like I say, it was pretty clear and I knew what I was getting into, but no story goes that easy, so we bought 1.5 sweeper trucks, and through some extra money and trial and tribulation, we had to swap some wire harnesses and more wire harnesses, and then I had a rolling chassis, but the actual sweeper didn't work yet, and we took it up to our friends at Schwartz and let them give us a look over, and that was going to be another expensive endeavor to refurbish. So I ended up just dropping that half truck, and it's when I bought my first brand new sweeper. I traded that one in, Schwartz took it off my hands, and I got an updraft. So we started out with 1.5, but we came back with one really good brand new one and one so-so, at least operating cab over.
And how many do you have today?
We've got 4 sweepers and 5 pickup trucks that run the support, day porter service, towing trailers and all that good stuff.
Well, you said that you'd been in the parking lot management industry for about 20 years. Both for a national provider and private operator. And so you must have felt that that gave you the kind of experience and background that you needed to take the other side of the street and, so to speak, and provide the service these guys would need.
Yeah, they're both operations-based. We're managing frontline employees, keeping customers happy. For a majority of that time, I've been a project manager, operations manager, vice president, but always dealing with frontline employees and the operations that go. I've had parking lot sweepers that we've contracted to. I never fully understood what they did. It was just one component of the parking lot management. But I knew, you know, they came at night, they blew stuff, they ran sweeper trucks around. One of the biggest liabilities and acquiring the business was the mechanical, was having a fleet of vehicles. Up until 3 years ago, I knew you put gas in it here, you took it to somebody to change the oil every so often, and you turn the key. But I've really gotten versed with mechanical, with vehicles, with, not major service, but more than just changing the oil and putting gas in it, for sure.
Well, you have to know a certain amount so you can oversee that kind of thing. Do you feel that your experience gives you a leg up when you go out and talk to property managers? And if so, what do you know or can you say that other people may not know to do or say?
Well, yeah, I think it's a leg up, and it's hard to, you know, it's no real rhyme or reason. It's, I think it's just being out there and being exposed to these things. Property managers, they're pulled in thousands of different directions, right? They love sending emails. They're pulled by tenants. They're pulled by their bosses or their superiors. They're pulled by contractors and just every which direction. Everything is emergency. Everything's got to get done just right now. So understanding where they're coming from, you know, it's kind of changing my hats. As the parking manager, I'm wearing a property manager's hat. So when something comes up, you want it dealt with immediately. Ideally, you're consistent. You know, that's something I share with our clients. I share with our employees. Contractors know this. You know, we all change trash bags every night. Anybody can change a trash bag. We maybe do it a little bit faster than common Joe on the street because we do it every night. But, you know, do I do it better than the next guy? Maybe, maybe not. But one of our real advantages is we do it consistently. We do it day in, day out, every night. And we do it at night on the times when people want to be home in bed. You know, people, they don't want to be out doing this stuff. I work a full-time day job, and then we go out and handle 4 sweeper trucks and 25, 30 employees. That takes commitment, takes consistency, takes a good team of people. But I think really to answer your question is that kind of responsiveness back to what property managers are pulled in all these directions, and we can just take one little thing off their plate, and they don't worry about parking lot sweeping. They don't worry about changing trash bags. Worry about something else. Don't worry about the stuff you fired us to do.
Well, I know a comment you made was that you feel like in sweeping, no news is good news, which means that if you're doing the job right, there it's going to be invisible and it's just done correctly, and you won't hear from your customers about anything. But what that means is when they do contact you, then it's a big deal. And so I really appreciate how you characterize getting right on any concern, immediately getting it handled, getting it done right, and it sounds like a very professional way to run your business.
Thank you. Everybody wants to be proactive. You know, if nobody ever called us, they received my invoice once a month, they paid us, no questions asked, that would just be the greatest way to go. But in this business, you know, we're maintenance, we're cleaning stuff up. They don't call us to say how great things look. They call us to say something got missed. Something's overflowing. There's a problem somewhere. And those things happen. So there's a balance there about, you know, we care. We want to be responsive. We want to go out and deal with it quickly, professionally. But you got to be able to balance it with, you know, what's the expectation and what's the response time.
There's been a certain amount of retail closure that's been happening with brick and mortar because of the increased competition from online retail. Have you seen that to be a problem with reduced budgets or bankruptcies or store closings or those kinds of things? Do you feel like there's diversification needed into other areas as a result of that? What's your take on that topic?
Yes, all of that. That was a nice quick summary. We could go on for hours and hours, I think, about brick and mortar and what the impact is. We've seen some of the national retailers close up. Kmart's are going. There's a pretty nice size traditional mall. It's actually an account that was bid within the last probably 6 months. It was bid. We had it previously. We did not retain it. It was told it was a price decision only, and then about 45 days ago, it was announced that one of the two major anchor tenants is closing up and leaving. So it was already gone. It was out of our portfolio. But what does that mean for the guy that picked it up? You know, they'll cut back nights of wheat, how many nights it's serviced. They'll change something, reduce the cost. I mean, they have to. I think it's happening. It's not me thinking it. It's happening everywhere we go. Price becomes a pretty big competitive factor. Service, our response time. You know, if our property managers like us and we're responsive to them. Diversifying, we're always looking to. You know, does it fit into what we provide? We've looked into landscaping a little bit, but there's so many landscapers out there and it's so competitive. I just don't think it's a fit for what we're doing. We bought a bucket truck a while back. That helps us change light bulbs and do some more service in-house. I've got a very nice partner, parking lot striping, seal coating, infrared asphalt repair. We just recently started a roadside litter. Got a contract with the state of Alabama to pick up roadside litter in front of and behind the mowers that do the medians and the shoulders on the roads.
That's an inventive one.
It all fits into our little portfolio of litter pickup. You know, we can manage clients, we can manage frontline employees, but it all stays in that arena.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are really moving toward the one-call model, and I feel sure that one of the reasons for that is your recognition from the management side of it that these guys are busy. They're pulled in a variety of ways, and by these guys, I mean property managers. And they love the ability, when you have a relationship, to work with one contractor. So I'm sure that that's a good direction for you to go.
Yeah, I like it. It gets to be what services do we want to self-perform? And, again, we've got a very nice contractor network. I'm not getting into the roofing business, but we know some roofers. We're not electricians, but, you know, we got some electricians that we can contact. Just being that one call, I mean, it makes it easy on them. We're not going to get rich. We're not going to retire off of, you know, running a couple work orders, but it just ingrains us a little bit deeper. If they think about, you know, I've got this challenge, I've got this issue, who do I call? Well, we call Cam South.
Right, right, yeah. Andy, you'll come up with something.
That's right, that's right. From time to time, we'll use our resources, pass it around to our, like I say, our partner network or stuff that we can perform.
You must believe, what this all tells me is that you really believe in professionalism at all levels. How does that go in terms of your employees in either training or meetings or keeping their morale up? Do they have uniforms, that sort of thing?
Yeah, again, you've done a great intro and kind of quick summary there. Majority of our folks have other jobs, full-time day jobs, other part-time jobs. These are guys that have kids in college or getting ready to retire and they need some extra pocket money. We've got a couple full-time guys that are committed to what we're doing, but we've got a great culture. You know, we've got really good team members and guys that look out for each other and help each other out. All of our guys are in uniforms. All of our guys are W-2 employees, workers' compensation. We've got a payroll service provider with direct deposit. We do company-sponsored events just to build that culture. We go company night at the Birmingham Barons down here at Regions Field, our brand-new ballpark they built downtown Birmingham. So we go out and, you know, buy everybody dinner, bring their families. Just a nice night together that's not at work. We did a ping-pong tournament at the shop. Again, just some fun stuff. But, yeah, all of our guys are professional. They understand what it means to be consistent. You know, nobody's scared to change a trash bag. We all do it. Nobody's scared to show up. You say you're going to show up, you're going to take this schedule. It's your schedule. It's kind of hard when guys call off at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. You know, there's not extra guys just sitting around waiting to go do that. So we do a pretty thorough interview process, pre-screening, pre-employment drug screen, background check. You know, they go out and they shadow somebody. They go ride in a passenger seat. They go out with a experienced employee on a day run. You know, make sure they understand what they're getting into. A couple different guys interview them, you know, job training, probationary period type stuff before they're turned loose and on their own. So, you know, we spend time on the front end so when we make that decision and make a job offer, it's somebody that's going to stick around. They learn about our culture. They learn about the type of folks that they're going to be working with. They learn about the company and what we provide. And all that just goes to, you know, building a good team, keeping a good team. It's hard to find people, so when you find them and you spend some effort training, putting resources into them, you know, driving our vehicles, we want them to stay. So, yeah, we focus efforts on that.
I think a lot of contractors don't realize how expensive it is to retrain a new employee. They don't really track all of that, and especially when you have somebody that fits in with your culture and you lose them as well, because you've developed not only a business but a culture, and it sounds like a camaraderie among your people. So there's always an effect on the other people as well as just having to fill a hole. So
yeah, one bad apple, right, can ruin. So we try and keep that away. The team's not going to let somebody come in that doesn't carry their weight. We do all this pre-employment. We do, you know, we had an initiative this year to do monthly training sessions, personal and professional development. We started out mandatory for January and February, and that was covering the basics of an employee meeting, safe driving, where the clock in, clock out, all the kind of housekeeping stuff. And then we backed off on that and said they were voluntary, personal, professional development, because we want them to be well-trained and, you know, balancing life is hard enough, especially if it's a full-time, part-time job situation. You know, just personal finances, you know, keeping your uniforms looking sharp. How do we take care of our trucks, doing our pre-employment inspections? And some of the stuff they can take with them wherever they go. And we didn't use, you know, a million examples, but the ones that come to mind are Chick-fil-A. If you have Chick-fil-A out there in Washington, that's a big thing down here in the South. And
mm-hmm.
Their culture, happy to serve you, my pleasure. Southwest Airlines is one that's always brought up about, you know, how their folks, their culture. And we're not going to compare ourselves to those, you know, big national worldwide companies, but it's the same stuff on a really small scale. With 30 guys, we can do it. We can focus on culture, and we can hand-select who becomes part of our team. So, yeah, I mean, it's our frontline guys are the bread and butter. It's what happens every night. You know, they take care of the trucks. They take care of the customers. So we've got to make sure we've got a good team out there doing that.
You know, I've always made a distinction when it comes to retail. Well, of course, there are a lot of distinctions, but there is a lot of pressure now from online especially. But one of the yes or no kind of buttons that happens when you walk into a store is, does the employee that sees you give you a smile and say hello and how can I help you or something like that? And teaching that is important because once people learn it, they think, that makes perfect sense and they'll do it. But some of the things that are common sense certainly aren't common to all, and you know, you do have to teach it. You talked about doing pre-trip vehicle inspections, and so that's something that you're, you know, mandating and making sure happens. One of the things that in our previous conversation that I thought was interesting is that you don't put a time constraint on a particular account or a maximum amount of time you can spend on a site, and then you've got to be out of there. And I think that makes sense, but you must use then GPS tracking to make sure that your average amount of time you're spending on sites, you know, are in the same budget that you've charging them for. Talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Yes, exactly. All of the trucks have GPS fleet trackers. You know, we tell our guys, we want the parking lot clean when you leave, you know, whatever time that requires. But on the back end, the next morning starts with one of our operations managers reviewing the previous night route. So we go through, we check the start time, and the start time of the vehicle closely matches to when they clocked in. And then we follow the schedule, so every property is, you know, serviced as it's supposed to be, and then drill it down even further. What's the time arriving on site? What's the time leaving? And through experience, just, you know, having serviced the properties, you know, is it 3 nights a week? Is it 7 nights a week? All of those things factor into it. But we have a benchmark. You know, property A takes 30 minutes. If that truck shows up and it's only on the property for 10 minutes, something happened. Either they did a tailpipe and they just drove right through it. The property was exceptionally clean and didn't require the time. But that's flagged. That's kind of put in our, you know, either send somebody by and do an in-person inspection today while we're out, put it on the shift report, and, you know, it goes back on the board for the guys the next night to check, and there's usually a reason. Or on the other side of it, they spent way too long on the property. You know, why would they spend an hour and a half on a property that's supposed to take 30 minutes? Well, they caught a flat tire and they had to change that. There was a, you know, traveling carnival that came through, and the whole parking lot was barricaded off, or the carnival just left and they had to do all the cleanup. But it's just having those benchmarks that it's just, again, one of the tools. How long did they stay there? Yeah, we might do a little counseling. You didn't stay long enough, or you stayed too long. We figure out why that was. But we're not going to go out and put time constraints and say you have to be there no more than 30 minutes. I mean, what if it takes longer than that? Then their whole night's behind schedule. So good guys that can make decisions, think on their own, and ideally, you know, back up what happens. You talk to them the next day, they're going to remember the previous night. Did something squirrely happen? Did something unusual go on? And these guys can justify it and back it up. So
when you are checking that, you have your operations team, then somebody is logging into that, and you've picked out particular markers that you want to see, deviations in time, or, you know, do you also monitor your trucks for maintenance or issues or anything like that? What kinds of things do you check with GPS? We've talked about some of those, you know, in terms of time in, time out, and so forth, but do you also monitor any aspects of your trucks?
Oil changes, they do keep a running thing on mileage. So there's little ticklers in there, you know, 200 miles to the next oil change, it sends emails out to the operations team. That's about it from the fleet tracker. It knows when the truck's on, it does speeding alerts. So I guess we watch speeding alerts. You can set parameters, you know, so many miles per hour over a speed limit. And then if it stays there for more than 2 or 3, 5 cycles, it can send an alarm. But the GPS particularly is just one tool. So kind of inside of that GPS, we do the oil changes, we do the speeding, we do the time on site. But then the GPS in general is just one of the tools. So we cross-reference it to the timekeeping. All the employees clock in and clock out. They can do it with their mobile devices. But there's a dashboard that we can look at. Access to the building. When they access the building with, you know, keypad codes and checking in and checking out. We pull all these tools together and come up with, like I say, kind of a simple dashboard for the previous night's operation. Key performance indicators, benchmarks, what are the metrics, all those kind of buzzwords, they're all nice, but you've got to know what you're looking at, where to get the information. And then just having the information, you know, it's a start, but what do you do with the information?
Well, that's right, and you're talking about the importance of going through that, having somebody go through that every morning and be ready to talk to your employee that night if there are discrepancies, and because they're certainly not going to remember 3 days from now, 5 days from now.
That's right. So you got to get the information, and you got to use the information. You know, it's something to do a pre-trip inspection and mark down every night. And our team's talked about it. You know, the guys go in and mark down. The tires are looking a little worn. And if they do that tonight, and nothing happens, and they do that tomorrow night, and nothing happens, and they do that the third night, and nothing happens. Well, why are they doing it? If we're not giving them some feedback, you know, we're okay, thank you, we've checked it, we'll rotate the tires tomorrow, or the scheduled service is in 1,000 miles. You know, we want our guys to report the information, but they've got to know what we're doing with the information, so it's a two-way communication. We don't want them just pencil whipping it. Right? One of my guys is big on talking about pencil whip. Don't just come in and initial everything. You know, we've got to look at the pre-trip inspections and do something with that information. So our guys that run these trucks every night, they've got to know that this is valuable. You know, and it's using it. It's using the information. It's filling out reports to send back to them. It's posting fuel reports. Where's the cheapest fuel? It's changing the oil when it's due, and they see the stickers go on the windows, and oil lights have been reset. They see the tires get rotated, so the next night they come in, they go, okay, that's no longer an issue. Move on to the next item. So,
well, all of those things
good, but you got to do something with it.
That's right, and all of those things really speak to, you know, professionalism and cohesiveness, but also to safety and having your employees know that you're working to keep them safe. And that also goes out to the property managers. You know, when they see a professional team, when they see a professional job is getting done, and they don't have to pick up their phone because of, you know, these recurring problems. And I think most all of us realize that somebody can make a mistake and things can happen. And if that happens once in a while, well, no problem. But when it happens all the time to where it gets on your consciousness, especially if a property manager has to wonder what's going on at his parking lot at night or whether a good job is being done, you know, that's certainly what you don't want. And keeping a customer is a lot easier and less expensive than going out and getting a new one, which actually is a topic I wouldn't mind talking about. What do you do to gain customers, and what is your sell to them? Because my guess is you're not the cheapest in your marketplace necessarily, and probably are not going after that business. So if you're not going in and saying, you know, whatever you're paying now, we can do a cheaper job just as well, which I'm quite, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm quite confident that's not what you say.
Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, what do you tell them? I mean, everybody, we have long since gone past the place where some people are sweeping and some people aren't. Now, of course, some do their own day portering with their employees and so forth. But what is your, you know, you have some businesses that are within an existing route, you'd like to pick them up, somebody else probably has them. How do you approach that question or those potential customers when they're prospects and get them to consider moving to Cam South?
Yeah, I think where we're at now, 3 years into it, it's become challenging. I mean, we know pretty much all of the big real estate groups, property managers, we know all of the locations. So we just want to be in front of them. If they do have a question, if they do have a concern about an existing provider, when budget season comes up, if it's time to just go look at something, we want to be on their minds. Going back to the property managers have a lot of things in a lot of different directions. If they get out of their car this morning, they look across their parking lot, and they're not happy, it's on their mind right now. They're going to want to make a change right now. And how do I make sure I'm one of those calls that they make? So, you know, cold calling's nice. Introduction emails, branded, short, simple, to the point. This is who we are. This is what we do. Here's my contact information. Please keep this in mind for, you know, when you have a concern, when budget comes up, when your contract renews, all of those reasons. And hopefully it just gets moved over and dropped into a folder. And when that day comes, they remember us. I think most everybody would agree with what you said earlier, you know, keeping an existing customer's the best way. Keeping a satisfied existing customer through referrals, all of the real estate associations, BOMA, IREM, all, you know, they all get together. All the property managers speak. It's a small world. So a referral by one of them to their associate is more important than anything I could do.
Absolutely.
So keeping the existing customers happy, you know, oh, this guy's doing, he does X, Y, and Z for me. Well, we haven't had any issues out of this. And I think that's, you know, most everybody shoots for that no news is good news. We're out at night. Nobody sees us. When they do call, we show up. We're professional. We've got, you know, uniforms. We've got a CAMS out the email. We've got a pretty basic website out there. We belong to memberships like World Sweeping Association. You know, if people go search stuff like that, we're there.
Mm-hmm.
We're a part of what's going on.
Well, I think that brings you a certain credibility as well. One of the things that I'll comment on some things I've heard from other contractors that we can just add into here and maybe ideas for you as well as for them. But I know that World Sweeping Association, we have a requirement for our Ethics and Power Sweeping Initiative, which as a member you have signed and asserted that you are following these basic business practices of, you know, paying workman's comp and having insurance and not midnight dumping and so forth. But one of the forms we have on the WSA website is something you can leave with a property manager that says, you know, here's what we do as a member of WSA. You might ask your current contractor if he'd be willing to sign something like this. And, you know, it puts a seed of doubt if, you know, if the about what the other contractor is. I know when we first started the ethics and power sweeping for the contractor locator at World Sweeper, I lost about half a dozen of the 40 or 50 people that were currently in the contractor locator. They didn't want to sign that, and that actually I found quite cheering because that meant to me that it does mean something, and that there are people out there that aren't having you know, professional businesses, and I don't want to help promote them. That's for sure. I know that two other things that I think are things that have I've seen success from other contractors. One is to, when if you're sending them an invoice every month, to include a special for one of your other projects, maybe something that you know, is that is kind of slow in that season that you're trying to jumpstart. Especially things like your bucket truck. You know, you can start getting into changing out holiday decorations, and I know there are several contractors that that's a big part of their business, is using their, you know, their bucket truck for that. So that's a that's one, and making sure that that your customers have a list of all the services that you provide, and any time that you can find a way to get that list in front of them. One of our WSA advisory board members not that long ago made up magnets, and the magnets just had their logo on it, and you know, here are all the services we provide, and listed them down, and you can put that onto any metallic surface, and you know, that was good for them too. So anyway, a couple of those things, and something else that I mention in well, these contractor interviews once in a while is, you know, at worldsweeper.com we have the postcard section where you can send old sweeper postcards. And so you're able to, a lot of times when you see a prospect, to stand out with them when you're sending them a thank you note anyway, consider going into the worldsweeper.com website, go down the left, send and receive postcards. You can pick an old sweeper and, you know, from the 20s or 30s and 40s, and send that photo along with a message that says, you know, thanks very much for seeing me today. You'll be glad to know that our sweepers are even newer than this one. Ha, ha, ha. And it, you know, it stands out to the property managers that, you know, because you're a little bit different. And
you've got to be memorable, like I say. When they
yeah, it's memorable.
They have a concern with the existing provider. They've got to think of somebody. And how do we become number one on their list?
That's right. That's right. And like you say, you want to be in the mix, and that's what you're after here, is to, you know, be one of the choices. And that's that's a big deal. You know, if you're not one of the choices, then they're not going to pick you for sure. And you know, from there, if you're one of the choices, you could count on your professionalism to, you know, make a difference for you. So, what other things would you like to talk about? We've covered a lot of ground here, and so what other items would make sense to discuss?
Well, I know I heard it from you when we saw each other up in Nashville at the National Pavement Expo about disposal. Something you focused on was, what's the sand? There's some requirements out there where you guys are, and the West Coast is probably a little bit more focused on environmental issues.
Well, it is, and pretty much required to dump into dumpsters on site. That's something that they're certainly moving toward. And part of that is liability for debris. And if you do transport, you know, your debris to a landfill or something like that, you want to make sure contractually that it's clear that you are not ever taking possession of that debris, period, end of story. That you're, as a courtesy, as part of your agreement with them, you're taking their debris and disposing of it.
Some states have, like, a screening. You have to screen out the sediment and the litter. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
It
may not be required, but highly recommended. And, you know, as your state is more and more environmental, then those are selling points that get you business, no question.
Yeah, I mean, I think ours is pretty informal down here. We have a 20-yard roll-off at the shop. All of our trucks, end of every route, all of our trucks dump into the 20-yard roll-off. We want our trucks parked, ideally with a full tank of gas and an empty hopper. It's just the last two things we do. We've got some 8 yards strategically located around Metro Birmingham for longer routes or higher volume properties. But you referred to the midnight dumping. And I think we've been hit with that, you know, an overflowing dumpster on one of our properties where my guys claim it wasn't us. We didn't dump at that property. But we get stubbed with it. We get a little bit of a black eye and go help clean it up or pay for an extra dump on somebody's dumpster. But I think from a legal, from an environmental standpoint, I think Alabama's pretty informal, you know. Pick up the trash and make it disappear. And I think everybody uses on-site dumpsters where provided or has their own. But I don't know of any rules or regulations related to it. So,
well, sometimes, I mean, looking into that, the idea of screening is something that you would want to consider, I think, especially as you get larger, because you can, and it depends on what your dump fees are, but, you know, you can end up making that. If you're having to come to your 20-yard dumpster a lot, then a lot of times you can lose 70% of your, up to 70%, I would say, of your material, weight of your material going to a landfill, and it can become a profit center or certainly pay for your machine and more. Part of that is the environmental laws in your state, too. Are they requiring that wherever you dump this stuff has to be covered? Does it need to, you know, to have a drain that doesn't go to, you know, so nothing can run off onto the street if it rains? You know, what are the requirements? And a lot of times in the states where they don't have many requirements for that portion of it, they also don't have many requirements for needing to screen. But part of it is, too, is what can you do with that debris? If you screen out all the litter and now you have just, you know, street dirt, is that something you can bring to your landfill for free and that they would then use for cover? Or that you can use for roadbed underlayment if you have a contractor that you work with that, you know, is building roads or redoing or that sort of thing where there's a natural place you can take it, then it's worth looking at screening at that point.
Yeah, no, that's not screening so much, but we did look at fuel. We looked at getting our own bulk fuel, 800-gallon, 1,000-gallon tank. Gas prices over the last while have been very favorable for us. We thought about, you know, taking some of that savings and getting our own on-site, but the savings just didn't equate to, right? The math just didn't work right now. We use a fuel purchasing program. So long back 3 years when we acquired the business, I was told, you know, just buy the cheapest fuel on the front end. Don't worry about rebate programs. Don't worry about discount programs. We're running all over Birmingham Metro 7 nights a week. Find the cheapest gas you can find and just buy it cheap.
And do you use a gas app for that?
We have cards. It's part of something we found through World Sweeping Association. What's the program?
Mm-hmm.
Ernie's.
Yeah, so you can have a card that keeps track of, you know, what sweeper it was and what you paid.
Right. Every vehicle has a assigned card. You can put constraints about how many purchases per night or a dollar amount, you know, up to $100 maximum. They can have PIN numbers. They can have odometer requirements. You can get fancy with it, but again, you know, you can collect as much as you want. Just depends on what you do with the information when you get it.
Right. There's so much information available that I think the hard part is parsing it all out. And are you using diesel or gas rigs?
Primarily gas. All of the chassis are gas. We do have one Gale Force, Schwartz Gale Force. It's a diesel auxiliary engine. But everything else is gas burners.
You know, there have been so many problems with the new Tier 4 engines that it's hard not to recommend gas these days. The engines are lasting a lot longer. They're less money to repair, certainly, and to purchase initially. And the trouble, boy.
Having that Gale Force in our fleet, though, with that big diesel engine, it's allowed us to do some bigger jobs. I mean, it will eat up the asphalt. It will suck it all up. I've got videos of sucking up like 3-inch roofing stone. One of the retail plazas did a roofing job. Contractor left a bunch of stone. I mean, it's not even gravel. It's 2 and 3 inch stone. And we shoveled a bunch of it, but when we got down to kind of one layer on the ground, we got that truck fired up, and it was pig. I mean, it sounded like a hurricane coming through. Those tubes and hitting inside of that hopper.
Yeah.
But boy, it's powerful. And yeah, that's a great truck to have in the fleet, just because I say we can say yes to some jobs that the smaller trucks wouldn't be able to accomplish.
Right. Well, and it's important to have that diversification in your fleet, too.
Yeah, smaller updrafts, parking decks, nice fuel mileage on those. And, hey, one more plug for you and your World Sweeper and all the benefits that you've coordinated. Marathon Hydraulics, we've bought several things from them, brush motors and seal kits. I've gone to your website several times and used the network that you've developed for discounts, for parts, for availability. I talked about the Ernie's Fuel Card, Marathon, your scholarship program that you put together. We had two guys awarded scholarships last year. Just a great thing you're doing up there, and we appreciate being a part of it.
Well, I'll push that plug right back at you, because you have been willing to be involved with our organization and, you know, providing information and that any time that it was needed, and review of, you know, new articles and that kind of thing, and contributed to our, made a donation this year of $1,000 to our scholarship program. So your involvement, too, is something that's been very admirable. So thank you for that.
It expands on what our company culture, our frontline employees, what we're trying to do with our guys, and what we're trying to build as a team. I'm not going to change the power sweeping industry by myself, and I have no intent to, but it's nice to know there's guys like you out there and some of the other folks you've introduced me to, all running professional operations, professional equipment, professional teams. It's a nice group to be associated with, and, you know, we're not those vampires out at night just running around crazy all the time.
That's for sure. And an article I recently wrote for Pavement Magazine, I keyed in on that a lot of times people say, well, even the lowly street sweeper, you know, even if you're doing that, kind of keying in on that Martin Luther King Jr. Quote that's so famous, you know, that if a man is going to do something, you do it right. But I'm reminding the power sweeping industry that you are the first line of defense for water quality, and that's the reason I got into this about 30 years ago, to teach public works directors that they were not picking up horse poop off the streets anymore. They were picking up clutch plates and brake linings and those kinds of things that are contributing to water quality. And as we've heard so many times, water is the new oil. And, you know, it's becoming more and more scarce, more and more difficult to keep clean. And power sweeping is the best way to keep that material from running into waterways. So that's, you can definitely hold your head up high in this business, that's for certain.
I agree. I've gotten phone calls from a few freight companies, freight yards, for those exact reasons. I mean, it's a yard of tractor-trailers, and they need it to sign off, and they need it to show that they're doing their water quality. You know, we're just one piece of their plan, but
an important one. And
right, we're there as that reason alone. I mean, you know, they don't do work on their vehicles on site. They've got a mechanic shop or a garage, but they provide monthly or quarterly vacuuming, power sweeping. I agree. I see it firsthand.
Well, is there anything else? Is that our end, or what? How would you like to wrap this up?
No, I think that's a nice summary. It's been a pleasure talking with you. We're here doing it 7 days a week, almost 24 hours a day. Bread and butter is parking lot sweeping. All of these other things are really nice and keep us interested and keep some guys busy. If you had a crystal ball, show me where it goes in the next 5 years. Not just my business, but the industry in general with brick and mortar and what's going on. Hope to participate in some more of your events and activities. Meet some more of these guys on a regional and national basis. I know you're advisory boards looks like a pretty good group of guys, and all have got all sorts of experience to hear about and learn about. We're here doing it, and we have a good time with it. So do it right.
Well, thanks very much, and I don't think there's a better line to leave it with than do it right.
Good. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Andy Coolidge, and Andy is the managing partner for CAM South. It's an LLC that's located in Birmingham, Alabama, with another office in the Auburn, Opelika area. And they are our featured contractor, will be for, well, this article, this information is being done in August of 2017. So thanks again, Andy, and I look forward to seeing you again. I think are we seeing you at the Sweeper Roundup this year?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, that'll be great fun, too. I'm looking forward to that. So see you in about a month.
Thanks, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Yep.